Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Go ahead, Mr. Lessie.
That was a big compliment, Your Honor. Thank you. Good afternoon, sir. Would you please state your name and spell your last name?
Jonathan Diamandis, D-I-A-M-A-N-D-I-S.
You've also been here all day.
Yes.
Sorry for making you wait.
No problem.
Do you know former State Trooper Michael Proctor?
I do.
How do you know him?
I've known him since middle school, probably the sixth grade.
Grew up with him, essentially?
Grew up with him, been friends for 30 years.
Okay, and if you just keep your voice up,
sure, yeah.
I'm sure other people can hear you, but... This
old
guy.
Can we turn off the fans and the air conditioner? Are they all off? We're just going to do that, sir, so that we can get through this a little bit.
Absolutely, sure.
Much better, thank you. So you say you've known him since middle school, elementary school?
Yes.
Graduated high school with him?
Yes.
And are you friends after high school as well?
Yes.
Do you have his cell phone number in your phone?
I do.
Have you texted with him over the years?
I have.
In fact, were you on a group text chain with him that lasted a number of years?
Yes.
I would like to show you a document, sir, and I'm going to ask you to read it to yourself, familiarize yourself with it, and then when you're done, look up at me. Okay.
Okay.
May I approach?
Yes.
Would you like this marked for identification first, or?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think he's all set, Mr. Neely.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, have you reviewed that entire document?
Yes.
Does that look familiar to you?
Yes.
What do you recognize it to be?
It looks to be a text chain with a group of my friends that I grew up with.
Okay. And so would all of those friends have been people that you went to high school with?
Not all the same high school, but the same time. Some of us went to different schools.
And you were friends during that era?
Yes.
And you've remained friends for how many years since then?
We've been friends for 30 plus years, probably.
Do you know precisely when that text chain started?
I do not know when the text chain started.
Months, years?
Years. Definitely years.
And that's a portion, in other words, there's a start time and an end time to that, but the text chain started before the start time that's listed on that document?
That's correct.
Now, I'd like to ask you about five different categories of information that allow you to identify the text chain. First of all, directing your attention to page one. That is an unredacted version of this. Do you see your phone number on page one?
I do.
And is that accurate in terms of your phone number?
It is.
At Well, do you have a passcode on your phone?
On my phone, yes, I do.
All right, and have you had that for years?
Yes.
So as of January of 2022, you would have had a passcode to get into your phone, correct?
Correct.
With regard to the typing of text messages, you didn't appear to be too active on this thread, is that correct?
Not from what I see here.
Did you see one entry that you actually did text?
Yes, one.
Okay, and I think these page numbers, they're all numbered. Could you direct us to the page where you actually chimed in? And if I suggested to you, it might be four from the end. And you don't have to read the actual text, sir. I just want to...
Sure. I'm just trying to locate it. Yes, I see it.
Okay. And the time of that, a date and time of that text as it's reflected on this document?
February 2nd, 2022, 12:38 p.m.
Okay. And what you type... Oh, I'm sorry. It's for the record, it's on page...
What's the
And for the record, reading what is typed there, does that sound consistent with something you might chime in a text message, a text chain of this sort?
I mean, it could be. I have no memory of actually typing it, but.
Sure.
That's not something, I mean, it could have been something that I would say, yeah.
At the very last line of that text, do you mention somebody's nickname?
Yes.
And what nickname is that?
Chip.
And whom do you know as Chip?
Michael Proctor.
Now, going back to the first page, there are a number of other phone numbers there. Have you... checked your phone prior to taking the stand today to match those phone numbers with other friends of yours?
Yes.
And if you could, and hopefully you remember them all, can you list by first name only your friends who are included in this text chain?
Sure.
So let's not... If he recognizes, I don't want to put names out.
Oh, I don't either, Judge. That's why I was saying first names. But if that's sufficient that he recognizes...
Why don't you refer to the last two digits in the phone?
Sure.
Is that acceptable, Mr. Brennan?
It is.
Okay.
You see, I'll list the last two digits of the phone numbers that don't have a name associated with them. Okay?
Okay.
If I may just have a moment?
Yes.
Okay, starting with the phone number that ends in 5-1, after you checked your contacts, is that a friend of yours?
Yes, it is.
Who was on the text chain?
Correct.
With regard to the phone number that ends in 6-8, same question, is that a friend of yours who was on the text chain?
Correct.
And with regard to 4-5, which is the next one, again, a friend of yours who was on the text chain?
That's me.
Oh, I'm sorry, that is you,
yeah.
Of course. With regard to 9-5, is that a friend of yours who was on the text chain?
Yes, it is.
And with regard to 9-3, same question, friend of yours on the text chain?
Yes.
And then there are three numbers there, one that ends in 11, one that ends in 46, and one that ends in 82. Do you see that those particular numbers have a nickname associated with them?
Yes.
Those nicknames, do you recognize them as being also friends of yours who are on the text chain?
I do.
And then finally, there is somebody listed as local user. We'll get back to that one.
Okay.
With regard to the other ones that you've just identified, sir, have you texted back and forth with them on those phone numbers over the years?
Yes.
And also with regard to this particular text thread?
Yes.
All right. Now, I'd also ask you, with regard to the content of these messages and who said what, and particularly focusing on the one that's identified as local user. Having read that text chain, were you able to determine whom, who local user is?
Yes.
And who is that?
Michael Proctor.
And was that by the content of the messages that Michael Proctor typed that you recognized it?
Yes.
And with regard to whether this is a complete accurate record of what it purports to be, what is your testimony in that regard?
I believe this to be a record of our text chain for this period of time.
It appears to be accurate and complete?
It does.
If I may have a moment, Your Honor.
Okay.
Just one more question, please, sir. Does the text message chain that you read fairly and accurately represent the circumstances of the conversation that was going on?
Yes.
Mr. Brennan?
Good morning.
Morning. Good afternoon.
Do you have an independent memory of any of the text conversations in the package that you reviewed?
I do not have a memory of this happening.
Thank you.
All right, so sir, I'm going to ask you to you're all set.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to step down.
Okay.
Your Honor, given that unfortunately this witness was not reached by the jury today, I would like him recognized as well.
He has counsel here with him, right? Okay. Does he have counsel here with him?
Yes,
all right,
ma'am.
Sir, you'll make sure your client is here when we need him.
I will do so, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
My name is Thomas Campbell. My office is in Boston.
I'll speak with Mr. Campbell in terms of the appropriate time of day. He's been very
helpful. All right. So, sir, you can move.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. And thank you, Mr. Campbell. We'll see you. We'll let you know when we need you back. It's probably going to be Monday first thing.
Understood.
Thank you.
So, watch yourself coming down.
All right. We'll hear you, Mr. Yannetti.
So, Your Honor, my understanding is there's an objection, so I would rather respond to the objection.
I want to hear you as to why this is admissible.
So, Your Honor, with regard, I assume we're just dealing with authenticity at this point?
No, we're dealing with both. You're the proponent of the testimony, so let's deal with both.
Okay. All right. So, regarding authenticity, Your Honor, there are several ways that are either independent or connected with each other by which or through which a party can authenticate text messages. The majority of the case law out there are defendants having appealed judges' decisions to admit text messages offered by the Commonwealth, and the majority of the case law that exists affirm judges' allowance of text messages into evidence. The Commonwealth filed a memorandum in opposition to these text messages being admitted, and not one of the cases cited by the Commonwealth apply here or are appropriate. The case of Commonwealth versus Purdy, in that case, the Commonwealth introduced text messages from computers seized at a massage parlor. The defendant objected that there was no evidence that he had authored any of the, these actually were emails, not text messages, any of the emails that were admitted into evidence. Nobody saw him do it. Nobody saw him type it. And nobody discussed any of the emails with him. But the SJC cited a long-standing rule, including Rule of Evidence 901B1-4, evidence may be authenticated by direct or circumstantial evidence. And the circumstantial evidence is essentially what we covered here in court today, the appearance of the electronic communications, the content, the substance, internal patterns, or other distinctive characteristics. Commonwealth versus Welch. It was a murder case where a boyfriend killed his girlfriend, was charged with killing his girlfriend, was convicted. The Commonwealth sought to introduce text messages between them, and various text messages from the victim's cell phone were admitted into evidence because, for one reason, they referenced the defendant's distinctive nickname. And in this case, we have a text chain with three nicknames, all of whom the witness recognized as being his friends. We have more to authenticate this text chain than in any case I have seen, and also more than in any case the Commonwealth has cited. In this case, we have an identification of every phone number pursuant to the last two digits. We have an identification of Michael Proctor's message relating to the contents. We have evidence of the witness's cell phone requiring a passcode, meaning that in order for his phone to be active in this chain, he would have had to have unlocked the phone with the passcode. And he testified that what was in the content of the message that he identified as being his is consistent with something that he would have said. And not only that, but he adds a fourth nickname, that being Chip, that being Michael Proctor. The Commonwealth, with regard to Commonwealth versus Welch, which is again cited in their memorandum, this opposition, Your Honor, they state what appear to be rock solid black and white legal principles, but when you scratch below the surface and you actually read the case stands for nothing in terms of what they've represented it to be. They stated that in Welch, the court must find that each and every communication was authored by the individual member of the group. That's just plain false. The case doesn't say that at all. It's nowhere in that case. And in fact, the messages were let in, again, because of the circumstances and the content of the messages. Cuomo versus Raposa, another case that they cite. The defense sought to call a neighbor to testify that he had seen the victim alive after the defendant had confessed to having shot him, another murder case. The problem was that the neighbor denied making the statement, so the defense wanted to call the neighbor for the sole purpose of impeaching him with his prior statement that he supposedly made to the police and use that statement as substantive evidence. So in that case, the defendant wanted to use an out-of-court statement for its truth. It was rank hearsay. That case had nothing to do with text messages or statements used to show state of mind or electronic communications. But somehow it makes its way into the Commonwealth's memorandum. Commonwealth versus Rajiv R., which is the second to last case that they cite, that dealt with a search warrant done at a juvenile's home. The police officer in that case was allowed to testify to what he was seeking, which was the goal of the search warrant, a firearm allegedly in the juvenile's possession. And he was also allowed to testify to what the juvenile's mother did during the execution of the search warrant, which is she directed the police to the juvenile's bedroom. The Commonwealth cited that case to say you can't use hearsay when trying to prove a Bowdoin defense or present a Bowdoin defense. That case had nothing to do with Bowdoin. The evidence was admitted to explain what the police were doing in the home. So it's a situation where, you know, there are times when, you know, the police stop somebody on the street or the police get a search warrant and then they show up at a home. And rather than just have them magically appear at the home with the warrant, the police are allowed to give some circumstances as to how they got there. Nothing to do with Bowdoin. It's just giving the jury a fuller picture. Yet it was represented to you by the Commonwealth that, geez, this is a Bowdoin issue and you can't use hearsay to present a Bowdoin defense. Commonwealth versus Sullivan, exact same situation. Testimony was admitted about DNA on evidence matching the defendant's DNA from a national database. The Commonwealth cites three principles. It's almost like they're setting a standard down that the court is supposed to follow with three factors. But again, none of the three principles that the Commonwealth cites is found in Sullivan at all. They're not even mentioned in the case. They're simply made up and put in a memo to ask this court to do something that the case does not support. And again, it has nothing to do with Bowdoin. So now we come to the arguments about the fact that the Commonwealth is claiming that these statements are hearsay. They're not. These statements contain insults of my client. I'll be kind and just mentioned the word.
So I read them.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, Your Honor, if you're going to allow this into evidence, I'll stop talking. Otherwise, I have to make my argument.
I understand what you mean by insults.
Okay. Okay. So I won't even mention them then. The Commonwealth is essentially arguing that we're offering these text messages to show that the insults were true. That's a silly argument. Obviously, we're not. Hearsay has three components. These are all statements out of court. None of them are offered for the truth of the matter asserted. None of them. Even the statement when Michael Proctor says that the homeowner's not going to catch any grief because he's a Boston cop. We don't know if that's true or not true. It's offered to show that Michael Proctor believes it's true. He's the lead investigator in the case. He has input into the case. He can decide who's investigated or not investigated. At least that's our argument. It's all consistent with our defense. It's offered to show his state of mind. Everything that he says is offered to show his state of mind and to show his bias. He, as the lead investigator, his bias in what he does or doesn't do. And in fact, Mr. Brennan said at sidebar earlier when we started this conversation that Bowden deals with what was done or what was not done. We're entitled to explore what was not done and not done, and we're entitled to explore why. We have evidence of why. We have Michael Proctor's words about why he did or didn't interview people separately, why he waited, for instance, a year and a half to interview a plow driver who was out there on January 29th, why he treated some people with kid gloves and other people with brass knuckles. He's stating it in these text messages. She's gonna go down for this. We're gonna pin it on the girl. We're going to make sure that there are some serious charges. She's effed. Those are what he says about, those are the statements he makes about Karen Reed in the infancy of this investigation. And to the contrary, is anything going to happen to Brian Albert? Nope. He's a Boston cop, too. These are all statements about Michael Proctor's state of mind. The prosecutor and I have been over the statements. I realize he's objecting to the admission of these statements. I don't think he has a legal argument that passes muster to do that, but should the court allow them in, we're agreed on everything except for three entries, which I think we could deal with pretty quickly. And unless the court has questions, I'd rest on that.
No, but I'd appreciate a copy of whatever you've agreed upon.
Okay.
So it's been a long day for staff, so I don't need to sit here and go through each one. Just get me a copy of what you've agreed to.
Okay. So this is the only marked copy. I'm happy to hand it to the court.
And you can take care of it and email it in.
Thank you, Ma'am.
So, Mr. Brennan, I'd like to hear you on admissibility. I haven't decided admissibility, and I'll hear you on authentication.
On the first issue of authenticity, this witness has no memory of any of the text messages. I think it's fair to conclude he's on the text message string, he recognizes the people on it, but there is no authenticity if he doesn't recognize them. The person that could best authenticate these text messages is Michael Proctor. This witness does nothing as far as identifying the individual text messages and whether they're reliable, whether there's been any additions, deletions, whether in some of the substance this is part of the conversation. Notably, I think, according to the questioning by Attorney Iannetti, he's made one comment at the end of the string that really has nothing whatsoever to do with the text messages that are at issue. So authenticity, I don't believe this witness reaches that conclusion for them. Regarding admissibility, I do not dispute that in the right context, these text messages are admissible. If there is an investigator in a case that makes derogatory remarks about an accused, I can't say that doesn't go to bias, nor do I reject the idea that it shows an unfairness or a motivation. But really, you need to put that in context, and I think Attorney Iannetti highlighted that. He says that this is not hearsay, it's how he thought or whether it affected a particular part of the investigation. It may have, it may not have. Even if he denies that it affected his investigation, it's still an appropriate question to ask just because that type of negative commentary, inappropriate commentary, was made. But to explore the state of mind and put it in context, you need to ask the person that you're accusing of having the bias, because perhaps it did affect the bias. Perhaps the person was very biased and made decisions based on that animus. Or perhaps the person made negative comments but had nothing whatsoever to do with the investigation. It is surmised to say because these comments were made, a witness was not investigated, or there was some other amorphous, undefined ill that happened. That's the whole reason why the witness who made the comments should be confronted with the comments they made, so the jury can fairly assess, is this relevant, is it material, and what is the value of it? I am not opposed to the omission of bias against a witness, especially a police officer, but it should be against that witness because they need to have the opportunity to admit, deny, define, accept, and explain. By putting these messages in with sidestepping, calling Mr. Proctor, they are trying to gain the advantage of putting information in front of the jury that has no context, suggesting it has a value that has not been defined, and then, as Mr. Iannetti just did, making an argument that because the comment was merely made, that therefore there was a consequence, and specify a consequence where there's no factual basis to conclude. Because he made a derogatory comment, he didn't investigate or speak to a plow driver for a year and a half. That defeats the purpose of defining the value for which this is being omitted. I do have some issue that it's really not under the context of Bowdoin, because this doesn't have to do with the adequacy of a police investigation. It has to do with bias. And that purely is the state of mind of the person who made the comment. I would not get in the way of confronting the witness about their bias if they were called to the stand. But to put it in this way invites speculation, it invites manipulation, and it invites a party on either side to portray this in a way that is not factually viable. It will be distracting, confusing for the jury, and it could be unfair for either side because it will lead to arguments about what it means without a factual basis. And so my position is, I don't necessarily disagree that it's relevant, but it should come through Michael Proctor. And if the defense wants to value, they should call Michael Proctor.
Okay. Mr. Iannetti, do you want to respond?
I would state the following very succinctly as I can, which is, yes, it goes to bias, but it also goes to the adequacy of the evaluation. The two concepts are intertwined. If you're biased or exhibit bias, the defense should be able to argue that the investigation was not adequate. I would note Mr. Brennan is not sitting at defense counsel table in this case. We appreciate the offer to help us with strategy about which witness we should call, but that's solely the province of the defense to determine which witness we want to use to authenticate and admit text messages. That's our choice, and we should not be deprived of that choice because Mr. Brennan thinks there's a better witness that should have introduced the text messages. There is no rule, there's no best witness rule in this case. I believe my co-counsel has already made that argument in another circumstance. His arguments, Mr. Brennan's arguments, go to the weight, not the admissibility. He is fully entitled to cross-examine this witness about all of the points that he raises. And in conclusion, Your Honor, he complains that we have not called Michael Proctor. I think that's the whole impetus for this objection, so that we will call a witness that they do not have confidence in to call themselves. It's unheard of in a murder case that you don't call the lead investigator, but that's what's happened in this case. We should not be forced to call Michael Proctor so that Mr. Brennan can then cross-examine him and lead him through basically his entire closing argument. He is entitled to call Mr. Proctor in rebuttal. He has every right to call Mr. Proctor again. I would rest on that. Thank you.
Okay. And just the very last thing, there's Kamala's motion for reciprocal discovery. Is there any objection to that?
Yes. It's not in
okay.
We don't have any communications with and they've asked for all oral communications to be reduced to writing. We told them that's not
right. So you're saying two different things. So you don't, this information doesn't exist because she has not had communications with you, right?
Written communications do not exist. I'm not saying two different things. Written communications do not exist. They also asked secondarily for all oral communications to be reduced to writing. They would have an obligation to do that written communication.
All right, so I'll get a decision out on that before 4:30. And I'm going to do a little more research on the text messages. Want to be heard, Mr. Brennan?
I thought you were standing up, Your Honor. No.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. I'll see everybody Monday morning.
Thank you.
All right, please.
You are unmuted.
Please be seated. Court is accessible.
So, Mr. Alessi, I was told you wanted to see me?
Yes. Can I just have a moment with Mr. Brennan?
Okay. Sure.
With regard to...
Your Honor, I've resolved the matter with Mr. Brennan that would have been the subject of that.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. So, I appreciate getting the redacted text messages. Over the weekend, Ms. Tianetti, this is yours, right? So, Mr. Brennan, I'm letting the text messages in over the Commonwealth's objection. I find that they're properly authenticated and that they do go to...
Can I turn the stand off?
Yes, can we turn... Thank you. So I do find that they're properly authenticated, and I find that they come in as they go to the state of mind of Trooper Proctor, specifically as that goes to... potentially reflecting any bias or omissions in the police investigation. So I'll give a limiting instruction at the time they come in. I understand that what was still remaining with disagreement are in orange. So I've got rulings on those. I don't think we need argument. We've heard plenty of argument on this. So regarding the first page with the numbers, I think we should do it the way I inquired about them last week, with just the last two numbers, not the last four. So those redactions will have to be made. I think the first page with disagreement is on page 02537. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so the first one from Bird saying something stinks, I'm going to allow that in. And then there's a message that you both agree to in yellow. And then for the orange, all I'm going to let in out of that is gotta be. And that's where it ends. So you'll have to redact out the rest of that, Ms. Gianetti. And the next page, and the only other one was 02539, is that right?
Correct.
So that comes out. All right. That's it. I don't know whose objections they were. Those are my rulings. All right, can we bring the jury in, please?
Do you solemnly swear the evidence you give from the court and jury in the case now, hearing from the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
Good morning, sir. Would you please state your name and spell your last name?
Jonathan Diamandis, Diamandis.
Sir, do you know former Trooper Michael Proctor?
I do.
How do you know him?
We've been friends since middle school, approximately 30 years.
And in what town?
Canton, Massachusetts.
Did you graduate high school with Michael Proctor?
I did.
When was that?
2000.
How close did you remain in contact with Michael Proctor after high school?
Very close.
Do you have his cell number?
I do.
How often have you texted him over the years?
Frequently.
And when you text him, is that a direct one-to-one or part of a group chat or both?
Both.
And I want to direct your attention to one particular group chat that had 9 people on it. Do you know the one I'm referring to?
I do.
And what one is that?
It's one that's been in existence for many years. We've been texting on that text chain for 10 plus years, I would suggest.
Okay. And over those 10 years, the members of that group chat, I'm not asking you for names, but if you could tell me, where are these people from? How do you know them?
We all grew up together. I went to school together at some point.
All from Canton?
All from Canton.
And with regard to the 9 people on that group chat, you're one of them?
Correct.
And whether or not Michael Proctor is on that group chat with the rest of your high school friends as well?
He is, yes.
May I have the exhibit that was marked for identification, please? I apologize, I don't know all the triple letter. Would have been the last one from Friday. Your Honor, may I approach the witness for the purpose of handing this? And I've handed you what has been marked triple N for identification. Do you recognize that, sir?
I do.
Have you seen that before?
Yes, I was shown it last Friday.
And what do you recognize it to be?
A portion of our text chain.
Okay, and when you say a portion, it's a limited time period within a much longer text chain, is that fair to say?
That's correct.
And with regard to how you're able to recognize it, I'd like to just ask you a few questions. First of all, on the first page of that document, do you see a series of phone numbers?
I do.
And do you recognize your phone number on that text chain?
Yes.
And having reviewed that text chain on Friday, did you see that you had actually sent one text of the whole body of text that's included in what has been marked triple N for identification?
Yes.
In order to send that text message, as of late January, early February of 2022, did your phone have a passcode on it?
Yes.
Have you had that for several years?
Yes.
In order to send a text chain, do you have to enter the passcode to your phone first to unlock it?
Correct.
And so it would have been you who sent that message?
Yes.
And having reviewed the content of that text chain, were you able to identify which entries were typed and sent by Michael Proctor?
Yes.
Who is he on that text chain?
He's listed as local user.
Okay, and it says local user, and there's a bunch of letters and numbers after that?
Correct.
Everybody else is identified by a phone number?
Yes, or a nickname.
And actually, even the ones with a nickname yeah. have a phone number, correct?
Correct, yes.
So 3 of them have nicknames, correct?
Yeah, I see 2 on the first page here.
Do you see...
third on the bottom, yes. I see 3.
So you see 3 there?
Yes, yes.
And so of the 9, we have 3 nicknames with phone numbers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We have 8 phone numbers total, right?
Yes.
And 1 local user.
Correct.
And you've testified the local user is Michael Proctor.
Correct.
And having known Michael Proctor for as long as you have, does he have any nicknames?
He does.
And what are his nicknames?
Chip and Bear.
Chip, C-H-I-P?
Yes.
And Bear, B-E-A-R?
Correct.
And having reviewed that text chain, is that a true and accurate document? Documenting the texts that were sent in that chain for the time period that is listed on triple N for identification?
Yes.
Your Honor, I would offer that subject to our discussions outside the presence of the jury.
Okay.
I have no further questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Can I have exhibit 209 when it's ready, please? Thank you. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Have we met before?
On Friday, I saw you. We didn't meet.
You had been friends with Mr. Proctor for about 30 years?
Yes.
Are you still friends with him?
I am.
Are you still close with him?
I am.
You were on a text chain with Mr. Proctor over the years?
Correct.
Did that include other friends of yours and Mr. Proctor's?
It did.
The extent of that text chain, did it go back many, many years?
Yes.
Have you ever looked at any records that summarize some of that text chain?
Yes.
Did it note that there were over 38,000 texts in that group?
I did notice the number, but it sounds accurate.
When there is conversations in that group, do you always respond to the conversation?
No.
There's a particular section, a segment of those 38,707 text messages that were shown to you. Did you see that document?
I did.
Are you familiar with it now that you've seen it?
Now that I've seen it, yes.
In that document, are there inappropriate comments that your friend Michael Proctor made about one of his investigations?
There are.
Was it about this case here?
It was.
In those inappropriate comments, did other people on that text chain, not you, comment or respond to Mr. Proctor?
Yes.
In that text chain where Mr. Proctor made inappropriate comments, you did not respond to any of those inappropriate comments, did you?
Correct.
You're on the text chain at a point later on in conversations, but not relevant to the inappropriate comments.
Correct.
Did you know that Mr. Proctor was fired by the Massachusetts State Police because of his inappropriate comments?
Objection.
Sir, do you know if Mr. Proctor was fired from the Massachusetts State Police?
I do.
Did he tell you why?
It was in connection to this case. I believe it was based on his text messages that were sent to us.
Based on these comments that are in exhibit?
Correct.
Did you at any time ever defend or endorse these comments?
I did not.
Did you ever encourage him in his comments?
I did not.
May I approach?
Yes.
Maybe your exhibit 209.
Thank you.
On the first page, ending in the numbers 27, is a full number, but I'll just use the last two numbers. Bottom right, 27. Is there a number of redacted phone numbers?
I'm sorry, on the first page on the bottom of the page?
If you look to the bottom right of the page, there's a number on it.
Oh, yes, and then there's it's blacked out next to it?
Yes.
Yes.
The last two numbers, is it 27?
Yes, it is.
When you look at that first page, does it have a number of redacted phone numbers of different people?
I don't see anything redacted.
The top box, are there numbers?
There are numbers, yes.
Are they partially blacked out?
No, the display names, it just lists phone numbers.
Okay. Are those numbers you recognize as the group of friends, including Michael Proctor?
They are.
As you read down that first box and go down to number of messages, do you see that?
Oh, yes.
Is it 38,707?
Yes.
Is that for a time period between October 18, 2021 and August 31st, 2022?
Yes.
I'd like you to look at the third text message that begins with Chip. Without saying who it is, do you recognize that as one of the people in the group?
I do.
And what did the person write?
Chip, name of that BPD cop.
And at the time this conversation was happening, were you part of this immediate conversation?
I was not.
Turn the page. Bottom right number is ending in 28. Do you see that page?
Yes.
Okay. Instead of a name, there's a local user with an ID. Is that Mr. Proctor's?
Yes, it is.
And does he respond to Chip, name of that BPD cop?
He does.
What does he say?
John O'Keefe.
What is the next question from somebody in the group?
How old?
And what does Mr. Proctor respond?
He took custody of his sister's kids.
The next one?
She died of cancer and the father overdosed on her grave.
And then one of the group sends a message. What do they say?
Oh man, that's rough.
And what's Mr. Proctor's response?
Mid-40s.
Does somebody in the group then post a Facebook posting?
Yes.
Do you know what that's about?
I do not.
You can turn the page ending bottom right 29.
Yes.
Somebody in the group ask another question?
Yes.
What do they say?
What's that? Don't have the book anymore.
If you could just speak up just a little so it's hard to hear with the fan on, not your phone.
Sure. What's that? Don't have the book anymore.
How does Mr. Proctor respond?
This one is a nightmare. Forget about the kids. That's awful.
And then I'd like you to go down to Mr. Proctor's next comment.
But all the powers that be want answer ASAP.
And what does one of the group respond with?
Gotcha.
Mr. Proctor?
Couldn't open it either.
Do you know what he was talking about when he said he couldn't open it?
I'm guessing the Facebook link.
I'd like you to turn forward to bottom right 3-1. Do you see what that is?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
John O'Keefe's Facebook page.
What does it tell us about John O'Keefe?
He went to Braintree High School, studied criminal justice at Northeastern, joined Facebook in 2008.
Turn the page, please. The first line from Bird, and I'll note this is January 29, 2022 at 10:56:39 p.m. Did I read that accurately?
Yes.
And what does the person say?
I'm sure the owner of the house will receive some shit.
And could you read Mr. Proctor's two responses?
Nope. Homeowner is a Boston cop, too.
You could turn to the next page, ending on 33. This is January 29, 2022 at 10:57:21 p.m. Could you read Mr. Proctor's two comments?
She waffled him. I looked at his body at the hospital.
And one of the group asks a question.
She waffled him, in quotation marks.
And how does he respond?
He was banged up.
Somebody in the group asks another question. What do they ask?
I thought he was drunk. Did he get beat up?
And Mr. Proctor's response?
Nope.
Turn to the next page, ending in 34. This is at around 10:58:06 p.m., running through 10:59 p.m. Another question from the group. What did they ask?
So the owner of the house was a woman cop that beat him?
And Mr. Proctor's two responses?
That's what I initially thought after talking to Canton paramedic. Then I saw the guy.
One of the group asks further down, what does... Sir, if you could either speak much louder or bring the microphone closer. We have a couple fans back here. It's just difficult to hear.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's not your fault. If we can keep our voice up. So one of the group asks, what does she waffle him, quote, end quote, mean? And then asks, what's the story? Does Mr. Proctor return?
He does.
What does he say?
She hit him with her car.
Turn to the next page, please, ending in 3-5. And these texts are from 10:59:13 p.m. to 11:08 p.m. The person by the name of Bird asks a question. What did he ask? What does he say?
Okay, that's fucked up.
How does Mr. Proctor respond?
Intentional or not.
And somebody in the group again?
Gotcha. He was frozen in the driveway and she didn't see him.
And Mr. Proctor's two responses?
That's another animal we won't be able to prove.
And the next one?
They arrived at the house together, got into an argument. She was driving and left.
What does the friend say?
What's the name of the Canton cop living in Canton? The other one involved.
What does Mr. Proctor say?
Biffed him.
Turn to the next page, ending in 3-6. These run from January 29, 2022, 11 p.m. and 11 seconds to January 29, 2022, 11 p.m., 39 seconds. The first comment by somebody in the group.
The BPD have any jurisdiction here because it was their own?
And then if you could look where there's a comment from Whitey at 11 p.m., 27 seconds.
Liz has got the blueprint.
Liz has got the blueprint. Do you know who Liz is?
No.
Okay. And what's the next comment by Mr. Proctor?
Not Kat. It's the total opposite. They have to rescue themselves.
What it's
mean? Recuse themselves, excuse me.
Recuse themselves?
Yes.
And then comment by somebody in the group?
Laughed at. Liz has got the blueprint.
On the next page, Mr. Proctor's comment?
Same with Canton.
At January 29th, 2022, 11:02 p.m. and 15 seconds, there's a comment from one person in the group, number ending in 5051. Could you read that?
But I assume you guys are out to make it cut and dry since it involves cops.
Next comment by Bird.
Something stinks.
And the comment by Mr. Proctor.
Yeah, but there will be some serious charges brought on the girl.
And the beginning of the next sentence is gotta be. And finally, the last comment on that page.
She's hot at least.
And that's a question mark?
Yes.
Turn the page, please. Ending in 3-8. These messages begin at 11:05, 57 p.m., run through 11:06, 39 p.m. On January 29, 2022, does it begin with comments from Mr. Proctor?
It does.
Could you read all of them, please?
These are not my words. I'm not really comfortable reading these. Do I have to say these words out loud?
So I'm going to see you at sidebar.
Sir, I'm appreciating that you're not comfortable with these words. These are not your words, are they?
No, they're not.
You didn't see them at the time?
I did not.
You've never condoned them or adopted them?
No.
In fact, you would denounce these, wouldn't you?
I would.
I don't want you to say words that are not yours. So I'll say the words, and I'm going to ask you if I'm reading it accurately. Is that better?
Yes.
Is that a fairer way to do it?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. On January 29, 2022, 11 p.m., 5 minutes, 57 seconds, and this page ends at 11 p.m., 6 minutes, 39 seconds on January 29, 2022, ending in number 3-8. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
Mr. Proctor says, from all accounts, he didn't do a thing wrong. She's a whack job, and then uses the C word to describe. Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
He then says, yeah, she's a babe. Weird Fall River accent, though. No ass. Are those the words that he wrote?
Those are the words.
There's a response at the bottom from one member in the group stating, oh, she's skating?
Yes.
Let's turn the page, ending in 3-9. These begin in January 29, 2022, 11:06 p.m., 55 seconds. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Proctor responds, zero chance she skated. She's effed. She's fucked.
Yes.
Is that what he said?
It is.
And then one person in the group says, no ass bitch.
Accurate? Yes, that's accurate.
Mr. Proctor, there's a response, laughed at, quote, no ass bitch.
Yes.
If you could turn to the page, it ends in 4-3. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Somebody in the group says, is that chick a smoke? And then the same person follows up with a question mark. Accurate?
Accurate.
Mr. Proctor responds, E-H?
Yes.
Nutbag, as my chief would say?
Yes.
She's got a leaky balloon knot?
Yes.
Leaks poo?
Yes.
Are those the words of Mr. Proctor?
They are.
Did I read those accurately?
You did.
And then a person in the group says, what are you guzzling on? And this is on, well, let me take a step back to be more clear. The comments I just read, those weren't on January 29th. Those were on February 2nd, 2022.
Correct.
And the time is 12:50 p.m. 12:50 and 5 seconds p.m. Begin the page?
Yes, beginning of the page, yes.
So these are different in time than the ones we read before, the series of text messages.
Correct.
Okay. And then at the bottom, one of the members of the group says, what are you guzzling on?
Correct.
And that's still February 2nd, 2022, and that's at 1:51:33 p.m.
Yes.
And then if you can turn to page, it ends on with numbers 44.
Yes.
And this is on February 2nd, 2022, 15224. Mr. Proctor says nothing, writing a warrant.
That's accurate.
There are no further text messages?
From Mr. Proctor?
Yes, or anybody in this group that you have as part of this exhibit.
That was not the last comment.
Okay, let me look. Is there another YouTube video?
There is.
You were not part of any of these conversations with Mr. Proctor?
No.
But you're still friends with him?
I am.
In your conversations with Mr. Proctor, has he ever suggested that he planted evidence in this case or any other case?
No.
In your conversations with Mr. Proctor, has he ever suggested framing a defendant, including this defendant?
Absolutely not.
In all your conversations with Mr. Proctor, has he ever suggested tampering with evidence in this case or in any other case?
No, absolutely not.
And Mr. Proctor was fired?
He was.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Sir, at the time Michael Proctor was revealing this information on this high school group chat, was this information public?
I have no memory, one way or the other.
At the time Michael Proctor was texting these messages to you and your other high school friends, were Ms. Reed's medical conditions public? Did you know anything about Ms. Reed's medical conditions?
I didn't know anything about this case at all.
Michael Proctor was the one revealing those details about the case to you and anybody on the chat who cared to read them, correct?
Correct.
And you were asked questions about why Michael Proctor was fired, and I believe you answered in a shorthand way for these text messages. Were you aware he was fired for being biased?
I'm not aware of that.
So the answer is
were you aware that he was fired for revealing confidential information about an investigation?
I was not aware of that.
And were you aware that he was also fired for conduct unbecoming a state trooper and a lead investigator in this case?
I was not aware of that.
I have no further questions.
You're not aware that he was fired for conduct unbecoming because of these text messages?
My understanding was it was due to the text messages. I don't know the other details of the situation.
Do you know he was not fired for any accusations of planting or tampering with evidence?
I do not know that.
Do you know that he was not fired for doing anything to compromise the integrity of the evidence in this investigation?
I do not know that.
All right. So, sir, I am going to let you step down, and then, folks, I have an instruction for you that I should have read at the time that text messages came in. You can leave them right with Madam Court Reporter.
Thank you.
And you're all set. Thank you. All right. So I've told you folks previously that I've got an additional instruction here. Before, and I think so you know this and you'll hear it at the end of the case as well. Before you consider any electronic communication in your deliberations, you must first find that it is more likely true than not that the person who authored or created or transmitted the communication was in fact the person alleged. And here we've heard it be Michael Proctor and high school friends, the testimony was, I believe. If you do not find it is more likely true than not that the person alleged to have created or sent these messages, then you may not consider the electronic communication in deciding this case. And also here, this text message chain was not being admitted for the truth of what's in the chain, but solely for the limited purpose of weighing the text as they go to Michael Proctor's state of mind, and more specifically, whether or not that state of mind reflects any bias or omissions in the police investigations. So, all right, is there another witness this morning? Okay.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.